This is the Spencer Wilson Show.
Travis Ishikawa hits one into right. The Giants win the pennant.
Trying to fight up a shot. Block, loose ball, 1 second, and Nevada wins.
Oh! Oh!
This is going to be a tough play.
Here's your host, Spencer Wilson.
Hello, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson, joined as always by Sean Cloud.
How's everyone doing?
Welcome into the studio. We got a lot of stuff to cover. We'll talk soccer, World Cup, Wimbledon. We got a giveaway that we're going to have. We got some interviews coming up. But we always got to start near and dear to our hearts, right here in the biggest little city. Let's talk, again, everyone's on kind of a soccer high right now, so let's talk a little soccer, because since our last show, all the 1868 FC continue to do is win. They beat the Seattle Sounders FC 2-1, and then beat the LA Galaxy 4-1. So they're coming off two straight victories just in the past two games. They've actually won, I think it's five straight. But the game against Seattle really kind of stands out for a few reasons. It kind of highlights this team's ability to play both sides of the ball, because not only did they give up an early goal, they go down 1-0 in the 19th minute, but then about 12 or so minutes later, I think 31st minute to be exact, midfielder Lindo Mfeka was sent off after receiving his second yellow card. So that means basically from the 31st minute on, Reno's down a man. They're playing 10 versus 11. Wow. And they're already down 1-0 in the 19th minute off that goal. So we get to see kind of how this team handles that adversity, and they did a really good job. Brian Brown, who I have said has been one of the best subs in the USL this year, just continues to create chances for this offense and for this team. He made a run. He was brought down inside the box. He worked a penalty kick that his teammate Seth Kasipal buried, making it 1-1 going into halftime, I believe, and then the 70th minute, Duke Lacroix put a cross into the box that allowed, again, Brian Brown just to tap it in with his foot, give Reno a 2-1 lead, which would eventually be a win for Reno. So three more points to the after that game. Then they go from Seattle all the way down to Southern California to take on LA Galaxy 2. And as they had to kind of wait themselves out in that game against Seattle, obviously being down a man, you don't want to rush into anything. But this game against the Galaxy, they just came right out of the gate. Seventh minute goal off of a or not off of. He's the guy assisting, but he didn't assist this one. Antoine Hopknot got his first goal of the season, knocked it in the seventh minute off a Paul Marie cross. Which doesn't Paul Marie kind of sound like a beauty product?
Yeah, it kind of does. like a hair product.
Yeah, catch the next Paul Marie bottle of shampoo out there, everybody.
He's gonna have one now.
Yeah, right. It's the next thing on the shelves here. So that gave him a 1-0 lead, and then Jerry Van Uyck knocked in one in the 33rd minute to give him a 2-0 lead at the half. And then again, they jumped out of the gate in the first half. They continued to jump out of the gate in the second half. A 47th minute free kick gave Reno a 3-0 lead. So 3-0 in the first 47 minutes of the game, or for first 45 minutes in the first 2 minutes of the second half, however you want to lay it out like that. Basically, though, they had a very good start to the game, and then they allowed a goal in the 57th minute. Maybe gave LA a little bit of confidence, but Reno put the final nail in the coffin in the 80th minute when they scored to make it 4-1, and that was the final. So Reno now five straight wins, outright wins, and 16 straight matches still unbeaten. And they have jumped up another place. They are currently second place now in the Western Conference. Not a surprise, really. Again, this team last year, slower getting out of the gate. They really picked it up. They were in sixth place, I think, four games ago? And now, all of a sudden, they've jumped up into second place.
Yeah, within the last three games, it's been... Yeah, three games ago, they went from fifth to third, and then in these past two games, they came up to second. So.
Yeah, so all Reno's doing is moving up, which is a very good thing in the world of sports. When you continue to move up, that's what you want to do. The 1868 will have two home games now. They have a home game tomorrow night. It's not an actual league game. It is just a friendly against, I just said it off the air. I'm going to see if I can get it right again here. Monarchus Morelia.
I think you said it better earlier.
All right. That's usually the way it goes. I'll say it perfectly fine off the air, and then I get on the air, and all of a sudden I just lose all skills to talk.
At least I don't even have the guts to even try half these names.
I appreciate that, Sean. Thank you.
At least you're giving it a shot.
Yeah. But they'll have that game tomorrow night, and that's actually part of our giveaway if you want to stick around. We got some other stuff aligned with that. But then 2 weeks later, next Saturday, July 28th, they will play St. Louis FC at home at Greater Nevada Field. That again will be back to a league game. And speaking of getting back to league games, the Aces have picked back up after their short All-Star break. We had some players in that All-Star game. And I believe you said PCL won. What was the score, Sean?
I think it was 12-7.
12-7 PCL. That's the Pacific Coast League. If you don't know, AAA is split up in between the Pacific Coast League and the International League. Kind of like your American League and National League. So those two leagues will play each other in the All-Star game. PCL winning it this year 12-7. So hats off to them.
So I learned something new during the All-Star game. I didn't know that all their stats reset for All-Stars. Did you know that?
What do you mean? Start the second half of the season?
Yeah, I don't know if it resets the second half of the season.
Oh, gotcha.
But it definitely reset for the All-Star game because they didn't have any of their normal averages. So like, Brito went up, he had a zero average, hit the ball, and now he's a one average.
I see what you're saying.
It was insane. I was just like, oh, that's
interesting. Yeah, they didn't carry over the season stats into the All-Star game.
No.
Yeah.
No.
I don't think it's exactly halfway through. I feel like this is kind of like the NBA All-Star break. Mm-hmm. It's more after two-thirds of the season.
Right.
And then you have your last third, I feel like you have your marathon, your All-Star break, and then you have the sprint kind of to the finish. Because we've had, March, April, May, June, now the first week or so of July, and you have your break, and then it's July, August, and that's basically it. I think they have three games in September before playoffs would start. So it's more two-thirds and a third, but that's just me nitpicking like I enjoy doing in the world of sports. But let's talk a little bit about the Aces, because as I said, they got back to playing last night. They opened up a series against El Paso. They won 8-2, and you could just kind of feel, you never know how a team is going to come out of an All-Star break. You hope they come out either a little faster than they did going into it, or the same speed, really the same pace of play. And I feel like Reno came out a little bit faster. I feel like the Aces really kind of exploded. They had a 5-run lead after three innings and just a slew of home runs early in the game. Tomas, Negron, and Walker all hit home runs last night. Jake Buchanan got his 6th win of the season on the mound. And that's really, I mean, you've said it plenty, Sean. Pitching has really been the biggest question mark for this team.
Yeah, and they really have changed it in the past few weeks. I mean, going into All-Star Week with a win over Sacramento, that definitely boosts them. And then coming out, you know, Brito and Vargas was out there. So they definitely had people in All-Star. So I think that really helped them to come out and be like, you know what? You're right. This is the stretch, the last run at it. Let's see if we can do it. Pitching needs to be on point. I'm sure they've all just been, you know, trying to dig in and eat it, you know, go.
Yeah, absolutely. And if that All-Star break wasn't enough, they got a 49-minute rain delay in there in between the 6th and 7th inning. So you got a little extra rest after playing.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that wasn't that nice. But coming out of the 49-minute rain delay, Shipley and Barrett provided three great solid innings of relief on the mound to seal it. Natalie Feliz will start tonight. But we also got to tip our hat to Uniel Caracudo, who had a great game last night, went 5-for-5 from the plate. So hats off, Mr. Caracudo. That's a fun name to say, man.
Yeah,
you put a little energy into it. It's a lot of fun.
I say it in my head, and then I'll forget the name and be like, I'm not even going to attempt that right now.
There was a baseball player, his name my mom loved. It was Shane Victorino, and she would just say Victorino, like, out of the blue. She'd
Victorino!
Be in the kitchen. Yeah, exactly. She'd be in the kitchen and say it. I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? But fun name to say. Hats off to Caracudo for a great night. Now let's talk a little bit about not necessarily the Aces, but something that's going on with the Aces. There's a man by the name of Kyle Van Noy that may sound familiar to you. If it does, you may have gone to McQueen High School, which is where he played football. He also has now gone on to play for the New England Patriots in the NFL. But he is coming back home here to Reno to take some very special guests out to a night at the ballpark. He's taking, I believe, 50 53 children and adults from the Koinonia Foster Homes and Family Services to a night at the Aces Ballpark. They'll play the Las Vegas 51, so a nice rivalry game for them to be there for. They'll get hot dogs, chips, soda. They'll get Aces swag. They'll have a chance to run the bases after the game. So it's a super, super cool night out. It's going to be kind of a Christmas in July theme there for the Aces. For that night, so just hats off to Kyle Van Noy. It's a very, very, very cool night and idea for him to do that.
I want to go.
Yeah?
That'd be nice. I'd like to meet him. He'd be fun.
He's going to be there with his wife, who's a former Miss Utah USA.
Yeah.
And Kyle's also going to throw out the ceremonial first pitch for the game. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Hats off again to him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that those individuals are going to have a lot of fun that night at the game. Hopefully they get a good one. Vegas and Reno usually put on some good games. So hopefully they get a good game that ends in a Reno win.
I agree.
And then some other exciting news here before we go off to break. Ice Skating Association, or the Ice Skating Association, has approved an NHL ice rink in South Reno. So obviously with Vegas getting the Golden Knights, there's been a lot of talk of Reno getting kind of a developmental team for Vegas, and that NHL rink has now been approved to go into South Reno. So if you're like me and you're like Sean, who are growing hockey fans, that is a very, very exciting piece of news. And I think that's all we really know as of right. I mean, you told me about this morning, and that's all I could really find this afternoon.
Yeah, it really was only released 2 days ago, and they only just approved it. It's going to be something we're not sure yet, so we'll keep you updated as it goes. We'll hear more probably in the next month or two.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, it's still going to be about a year and a half or
2 years
at least.
They're
going
to at least release plans and everything.
Oh, yeah, but the fact that they've got it approved and it's on its way to becoming an actual thing here in Reno is very, very exciting.
Very exciting.
Always good things going on locally. So when we come back, we also got to have another local experience. We got to go to Edgewood for a few days. We'll have some sound bites from that and also a giveaway. So stay tuned. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
All right, welcome back inside the studio. Just got done talking a little bit about local sports, and Sean and I got the opportunity to go down to South Lake Tahoe to the Edgewood Golf Course for the American Century Championship. It's that celebrity tournament that goes on every year down there, and that was pretty cool to be down there in the thick of it like that.
That was a great experience, especially for my first time ever going, but this time being, you know, inside the event, being able to go where other people couldn't go was very, very nice. And I mean, seeing everyone just come together was amazing.
Yeah, it's really cool just to see the different athletes, different celebrities, just from all different periods of life and different career standpoints together, just talking about, you know, just really just shooting the breeze.
Yeah.
And it's just because, you know, to them, I mean, for us as fans, it's fun to watch them play, but for them, like, them talking about football is like us talking about what we do here at the station. Like, it's work.
Right.
Which is funny to think about. But it's just cool to see them out of their environment talking about things in their daily life. It's very, very cool. We got to talk to a couple people. Colt Ford, who's a country musician, got to talk to him. Got to talk to John O'Hurley, the actor. Also got to talk to Herm Edwards, who's the coach. Who's going to be the new coach of the Arizona State University Sun Devils.
I'm excited.
Sean's excited. My mom's excited. Both ASU alums. So they're going to be celebrating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we will.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens because the Pac-12 is wide open.
Yeah.
With Chip Kelly coming back to UCLA. Now you got Herm at ASU. It's going to be very interesting to see how the South kind of, especially with Darnold now gone from USC, how do they bounce back with a new quarterback?
It's basically NFL, but college, because now we just have a whole bunch of NFL coaches just sitting on every team. So it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be a great year, too.
I'm always excited. We're always excited for football season. This country's excited for football season. But we also got to talk to two Super Bowl champion and one Hall of Famer in quarterbacks. The first one we got to talk to was Trent Dilfer, who is a former quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens. That's who he won his Super Bowl title with. We got to talk to him as he was coming off the driving range, and this is how it sounded.
Just getting started with the driving range.
Playing the driving range.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very nice. Have you played? You've played this course before, haven't you?
I've played this tournament 20 straight years.
Oh,
not
very
20
cool.
straight.
20.
I missed a couple with injuries, but 20. This will be my 20 or 21st.
Oh, very cool. Okay. Do you have a? Does the memory stand out like right off the top of your head?
I finished second a couple times, third a couple times. I've had the lead on the back nine. I had Chris Chandler shoot 30 on the back nine one time on me. Aldo Greco shot 31. I've blown it myself a couple times. So yeah, I don't know if all the memories are great.
What's kind of the key to this course? Because we know that there's a tough stretch coming down here at the end. What's kind of the biggest thing you remind yourself when you're going through and playing?
You know, I think it's a couple things. Number one, I don't think you have to be heroic off the tee. You just have to be wise. You got to get close to the hole. It's hard to make a lot of putts out here. So you want to give yourself as many opportunities where they're makeable putts. And then you got to be aggressive. With the years I've putted poorly, it's because I've been tentative. The greens can get in your head a little bit. So you got to be aggressive. You got to be willing to make. You probably have to make 15 3 to 6 footers in the course of 3 days to compete, and you just got to be really solid over those and trust it and knock them in the back of the hole.
Now I heard you talking over there. When you were a kid, you were sent out and played golf a lot. During your career as an NFL player, did you find time in the off season and stuff to go out and play a lot of golf? Because you have a fairly good season to be off in football.
Probably too much. My wife tells me I'd probably been a better football player if I didn't play as much golf as I did. And that's probably true. I made golf a priority in the offseason. I played in tournaments and would practice, and you know, I still did my workouts and everything, but I probably didn't fall in love with football in the offseason as much as I should have. Golf was kind of my passion, and yeah, I played a ton. I never played during the season. I put the clubs away once we went to training camp and never pulled them out, but once that last game was over, it was a Super Bowl or we're not even in the playoffs, the first thing I did was pull them out and start practicing.
Trent, 13 seasons in the NFL.
14
seasons.
Wikipedia's wrong. Yeah. It's 14.
and Super Bowl, what part of your body gives you the biggest challenge these days?
I've had some physical challenges. I ruptured both Achilles, and that kind of started a chain of events. I just had left knee replacement in November. I'm due for a right knee replacement in the next 3 to 5 years. I had 14 separated shoulders. So I can keep the shoulders somewhat pain-free if I do enough maintenance. The knees, I haven't been able to avoid the pain. That's why I had the replacement. So I struggle with that. I can't do anything ballistic. Walking on the golf course is tough. But relative to a lot of my teammates and peers I played with, I think I'm doing okay. So
we can think with all the shoulder action, you know, when you're doing the long drives.
I'm not a long driver.
It's almost like a therapeutic thing. It's kind of like yoga, but with better grass.
Yeah, I wish I could hit it further. I think, the Achilles and the shoulders have limited how much club head speed I could generate. I remember, I'll never forget, the year before I tore my right Achilles, I actually tore in the game Emmitt Smith broke the rushing record in Dallas. The year before, I got my club head speed test with the drivers like 109, 110, which was solid. You know, I hit it like mid-tour length. So I was never self-conscious about my length. Next year, I went out after I recovered from my Achilles, and I was like at 101. And I've never gotten it back to more than like 105. So, you know, I'm giving away 30, 40 yards to a lot of guys I play with off the tee, but you have to make it up other ways.
We have a fair amount of quarterbacks out here. Do you ever run into like Aaron Rodgers or like a Joe Theismann or Steve Young and have any kind of conversation with them, or maybe a little side bet going on during the tournament?
We always do. Yeah. Those are all dear friends of mine. We've all played a ton of golf together. We all have side action going on. Whether we're good, bad, indifferent, we'll figure out ways to keep it competitive. And I think all of us love this game for the same reason. It's a challenge. It's technical. It's analytical. And it's something we're able to do in the offseason. We can't go play tennis.
Right.
Can't go play squash. We're not going to run a lot of hoops. We're not going to do those things. So this is really the hobby that most of us take on in the NFL.
Hopefully you walk away with a little more money than you lose.
Exactly. That's always the goal, is to make more money on the course than you lose. So
a couple more questions. We had a very talented draft for quarterbacks just now. Any kind of young quarterback stands out in your mind that you think will really have a great first year in the NFL?
I mean, I think first year success is probably set up for Rosen as much as anybody. Went to the best team of all of them, in my opinion. You know, they have people around him that can make him look good. He's got that mind to step in right away. He's mature beyond his years. I think Darnold's going to be a superstar. I don't know when he'll play, but I think he'll be a superstar. And then I'm curious, like everybody is, about Baker. I see all the reasons why Baker went one. I see all the reasons why he shouldn't have also. So I think it's going to be, you know, for me, Baker Mayfield's a high ceiling, low floor guy. He's got a chance to be really good. He's got a chance to be a flop.
Yeah, absolutely. Always that kind of a risk when you take a young player out of the draft. And then we know kind of your rivalries throughout your career. We've heard in the news that Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson are getting a rivalry tournament for charity going together. Did you ever kind of watch one? Did you lean more towards one of those two guys growing up? I know
Phil better than Tiger, so my rooting side would be for him. I think it's fascinating. I'm glad they're doing it. I'll be tuned in like everybody else, and just because I know Phil and have played some golf with him, he'll be the guy I'm rooting for.
Big thank you again to Trent Dilfer for taking some time to sit down and talk to us, especially in that driving range area. It's very busy, a lot of guys getting yanked around to go talk to whoever and this and that person. Then you got the whole fans along the guardrail screaming
for
people.
Yeah, there weren't that many there, though, the first day.
That's true, the first day.
I'm sure the second day was packed, but that first day wasn't too bad.
Well, the second day was packed because there was about probably 300 to 400 people there, specifically for Steph Curry.
Right.
I mean, I drove in on the shuttle, and I'm not kidding, there was probably a gaggle of at least 100 Curry fans just making their way to the audition area. Then when I got to the audition, not audition, autograph. When I got to the autograph area, there was even more Curry fans. So just him alone attracted about half another audience. But Trent Dilfer, not the only quarterback we got to sit down with. We also got to sit down with Hall of Famer Joe Theismann, which was a huge treat. I don't think he remembered me as the guy that almost hung up on him. I wasn't going to bring that up.
Could be a good thing.
Yeah.
We're not talking.
Yeah, we're just going to take a break with this one. but here is how that interview sounded again, asking him if he was just getting done or just getting started on the range.
I'm actually going out to hit some balls. I played this morning. I played yesterday. I'll play tomorrow. I'll play Thursday. I'll play Friday. I'll play Saturday. I'll play Sunday. So it's about 8 days straight for me. But I'll just go out, you know, swing the club a little bit just to get comfortable with some of the things I want to work on. I spent a little time on the putting green. I like what's going on over there. So now I'll see if I can finish the day off with a lot of things I like. So, yeah, I'm about to go practice again.
And I know you've been here a couple times before. Is there any kind of memory or anybody that you've played golf with here that really kind of stands out in your mind?
Well, I have played a couple times before. I think this is the 28th year. I've played in 26 of them. So, but you're forgiven because of your youth, to be perfectly honest with you. One of the most enjoyable experiences I had was I had a chance to play with Michael Jordan and Mark McGuire on a Sunday. And so I spent a day, you know, I took a walk in sunshine with Michael and Mark. So it was a great thrill for me. I mean, this is as star-studded a field of people you're ever going to find from the world of entertainment, from the world of music, from the world of athletics. You're just not going to find those kind of people. So it's great. I mean, it's just it's a lot of fun. But that was quite an outstanding afternoon, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I can imagine that sounds pretty like a pretty good threesome to go out there and play some golf with. When you and Michael Jordan, those guys are playing together, what's kind of the conversation like? Do you guys talk a lot about careers, or is it more just kind of family, or what's that kind of conversation like?
Well, because we're on a golf course, a lot of it has to do with golf. You know, the shots, the grip. You really get to know them better as people, and especially in tournaments, which is interesting. You're not always in the same place. There are no carts, so the only time you really get to visit is either on the green, coming off the green, or on the tee box. And then quite often, you know, I was sort of always hitting first, and then Mark and Michael were going to hit a lot further up than I was. But you talk about a lot of different things. We don't get into politics and all that kind of stuff. It's life. It's the world of athletics. It's, you know, moments that we've experienced. We've been very blessed. I mean, there's so many guys out here, whether they're Stanley Cup champions or NBA or World Series or Super Bowls or World Cups or, you know, tennis champions, Wimbledon champions. I mean, you name it. That's what the tears. Everybody, those type of people. And I think if you have a chance to sit down with somebody that's been that accomplished, you say to yourself, you know what? It's a good day. I learned something today.
What's the biggest similarity mentally between playing football and then coming out on the golf course and trying to keep yourself just involved in the game and not getting too in your own head or getting too preoccupied with something else on the course?
Well, the big thing about that is you don't want to talk yourself in and out of too many things. Actually, an open mind, a vacated mind is a very good thing. So often you see on tour a lot of the caddies engaged in conversation with the players. That has to do with just not letting them think about the next shot. You know, what did I do? Every shot you hit has got a problem with it. It's either too far left, too far right, I didn't catch it right, I'm too high on the club face, whatever it might be. You're always going to find a reason why you did something wrong. And so I think mental toughness is the big key, whether it's in life, whether it's in athletics, whether it's on the game of golf. You just have to play shot for shot and hole for hole. And having a short memory is a good thing out here. And having as many concussions as I've had, having a really short memory has worked out quite well.
Is there a specific hole out here that you look forward to the most, or that makes you a little more nervous than other holes out here? Which hole kind of stands out in your mind?
17 is always a lot of fun because it's a par three, and you know the crowd is there, and you get a kick out of playing with the crowd. I mean, the adrenaline's flowing. 15 is interesting because it's an uphill, slight dogleg. I mean, you can hit it pretty straight, but it's a chute. You're hitting up a chute. If you feel good about your swing, there really isn't any hole out there that scares you. What scares you is the greens, because you usually don't see a lot of, as much. You see more break in it than there usually is. And each year I have a goal. Every year I try and shoot in the 70s. So that's one goal. The other goal is to try and two putt as many greens as possible, because you're going to see guys out here rolling these puppies a long way past where they belong, just because there'll be a 5 or 6 handicap at their home club. But there are no gimmies out here. Oh, pick it up, go right ahead. Okay, what's a 2-shot penalty? That's fine, go right ahead, do what you want. So, it's in the hole. And that changes the mental approach to everything, because a lot of guys out here don't play that way. And a lot of guys really don't play that much golf. Some of us are obsessed with it. So I'm one of those obsessive individuals.
Speaking about crowd kind of interaction over there on 17, is there any kind of, did you have like a weird crowd interaction at one point? Anybody asking you to sign something weird or kind of an odd place to take a picture? Have you ever had any kind of that interaction with a fan before here?
I haven't had that here. I've had experiences where people have asked me to sign things in different places that, being that there are children listening, we won't get into. But you're always running into unusual people and circumstances. And 17's fun because we'll throw the ball around. We shoot baskets. There's about 15 guys out here that have a chance to win this golf tournament. The other 70 of us are out here to support them, to support the charities of American Century. And that's something that really people ought to think about. American Century takes 50% of their net profits and they give it to charity, to cancer research. I can't think of any companies out there in the world that contribute as much to research. And then the wonderful things that are generated up here in the Lake Tahoe area, the community, like today's golf tournament had to do with the Lake Tahoe Visitors Association. So, if people are listening, have never been to Lake Tahoe, please put it on your list of places to go, and especially this time of year. It is absolutely gorgeous. I don't ski. I managed to hurt myself in enough ways. I don't need to go find another way to go kill myself. But this is one of the most beautiful places in the world. And so, to be able to have a chance to play up here and be able to do something, to be able to give something back. I mean, I'm doing something I love, but yet we're being able to do something to give something back, and that makes it even more fun.
Thank you again to Joe Theismann. That was a very fun interview to do with him, and he's 100% right. If you can get out to Tahoe, do so, because it's a lot of fun. Any time of the year, really.
Any
it's
time
a lot
of
fun.
Year.
So before we go to break, because we're talking Wimbledon and World Cup after the break, but before we do, Sean, we got something for the people.
We have a pair of tickets to go see the Reno 1868 FC take on the Monarchs Morelia in an international friendly game at the Greater Nevada Field tomorrow, July 14th. So you have to pick it up today by 5:30. And you'll also get an assortment tray from Porta Subs as part of our celebration of being your sports station for 50 years with Lotus Radio.
So that goes to caller number 9 right now, 775-333-0945 is the number. World Cup and Wimbledon when we come back on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Welcome back inside the studio. A big congratulations to Marty from Sparks. He's the winner of the pair of tickets to the 1868 game tomorrow night and some yummy Porta Sub sandwiches. So congratulations
yummy
to Marty. Yeah. So let's talk a little World Cup, because we started back in March of 2015. We started with 210 countries who all had the same dream of winning the World Cup. We are now down to 2 left standing, as France and Croatia. And these are both group winners. So that streak will continue. Since the field has grown to 32 teams, a group winner will have won every World Cup. France finding themselves in their third final. They won in 98 over Brazil. They lost in 2006 to Italy in a penalty shootout. And Croatia making their first ever World Cup final. Their best finish to date was third, and that came back in 1998. They beat the Dutch 2-1 in the third place game. So with that now, we kind of look at these two teams that had two really, really fun semifinal games. It started with France and Belgium. They had a first half that was aggressive. I mean, France came out in the first, I want to say, first 15, 20 seconds and had a shot on goal. So it was a very fast-paced, very aggressive first half. Scoreless, though. And you kind of wonder, is this the kind of game we're going to see? Is it going to be another late goal? Not so much a late goal. In fact, in the 51st minute, France was able to break through.
Now, were you scared? Did you panic at that point?
I was a little unnerved, yes, but I was just happy to see a good game between the two. And this goal in the 51st minute was a lot of fun. I think we actually have it. Do we have that soundbite?
We do have that soundbite.
Here's how that goal in the 51st minute sounded.
Griezmann with the corner, kicking him, Titi! Arriving on the near post, there's the breakthrough. It's Samuel Umtiti for France. And France now can sniff the World Cup final. And it is over. Allez les Bleus, all the way to the World Cup final. Brave Belgium eliminated.
So that was the goal that set France apart 1-0. That gave them the win. And the French goalkeeper, Hugo Lloris, made about four or five spectacular saves in that second half to keep the French up 1-0. They moved on.
I definitely feel that their goalies, is that what you call them?
Goalies. Our goalies are keepers. I think keeper is the technical term, but goalie or keeper, whichever.
They do the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same position.
They were, like, for both games. I mean, I know the England goalie definitely blocked so much in the England game. That was the main thing that I saw. There was a lot of kicks on goals, but the keepers, goalies, whatever you want to call them, they did great through everything.
They did. They handled themselves very well. And like we just kind of alluded to, England went up against really a Cinderella story type team in Croatia. No one really expected them to be at this stage. It was even kind of a question mark of whether or not they would get out of the group. They managed to win that. They're now in the final. Again, though, England, it just seemed like they had that momentum, and they got off to a very quick start. Fifth minute, they got a free kick, and Kieran Trippé is how it's pronounced, but either way, this is how it sounded from Moscow.
It is Kieran Trippier. It is delicious! Glorious! Glorious England goal! Picture perfect! There is not a better strike than that.
That might be one of the best calls of the World Cup.
That's my favorite call of all time
right
there.
The yell of "that is delicious" is probably like one of the best things I've heard in the World Cup. But England taking a quick lead. I mean, those first 5 minutes were all England. The way they just were able to work that free kick, they got it in, 1-0 going into the half. And then that second half belonged to Croatia. I mean, every single second of those 45 minutes plus in the second half belonged to Croatia. And you kind of saw them press and press and wondered when they'd be able to break through. Well, the 69th minute was when that happened.
Aimed in beyond Mandzukic and fired home by Perisic. Croatia's cravings are satisfied, at least for now. And the semi-final is back where it began.
I wonder if they just starved the broadcast announcers, because it's always about food.
Maybe that's just how he was. He's like, you know, everything's going to be food-related.
I think he had some berries and cream from Wimbledon on his mind. Yeah, right. Watching that, I need something to eat here. But that made it 1-1, and then literally just a blitz of near chances in those final 10 minutes, plus going into extra time. And then, again, first half of that extra time, a little sketchy going back and forth. But, again, we get to those last 15 minutes, and then Mandzukic able to bury it for Croatia.
So, though, did Perisic. Mandzukic! Hit the front! Mario Mandzukic pounced, and England are hurt! And Croatia, for the first time ever, will play in a World Cup final.
First time ever in a World Cup final. Also, I believe the first team to play three consecutive extra time games in a World Cup to get there.
Wow.
They beat Denmark and Russia in penalty shootouts in the round of 16 in the quarterfinal, then beat England 2-1 there in extra time. England, that was also their second extra time game in their three games. They beat Colombia on a penalty shootout in the round of 16. So now we kind of set up for the big grand finale, right? So Belgium and England will play their third place game. That'll happen tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. on Fox. I don't know about you guys. I've never been interested in a third place game.
There's no point for it.
I mean, unless it's the Olympics and there's actually like a bronze medal at stake, what's the point here? No one cares really about this game.
No one.
I mean, the players don't even really care about this game.
It's all going to be bench players.
Yeah, I mean, that was which is pretty much what it was the first time these guys played in the group stage, because Belgium and England were playing for the group win, but they were both already through. So I think there was a total of, what was it, like 15 or 16 changes made between the two teams to their lineups. So that game will happen tomorrow, but the big one, the big money game, goes down Sunday morning, 8 a.m. on Fox. France will play Croatia. Tune in. I think it's going to be France, but I'm going to be pulling for Croatia to win.
Well, you know, since I picked France over Belgium, I might as well stick with France, because I did not see Croatia winning. I really thought that England was going to win that game.
I did too. I thought once they got that goal early in the game, they're just going to keep building on that and run away with it. Yeah. But speaking of running away with it, you know who's going to run away with Wimbledon on the women's side? Serena Williams.
Really?
She is all set to play Angelique Kerber in the finals tomorrow. Williams leads the head-to-head series 6-2, and including their final matchup tomorrow in Wimbledon, their last four meetings head-to-head will all have been in the final round. Stanford in 2014, which Williams won 7-6 and 6-3, and then the Aussie Open 2 years ago, Kerber beat Williams 6-4, 3-6, 6-4, and later that year in 2016, Williams beat Kerber also in the Wimbledon final. So it'll be interesting to see how they match up against each other. A lot of people think Kerber's style will cause Williams some issues. Williams, of course, looking to add to her 23 career major titles. Kerber looking for her third. So we'll see.
So
how
the veteran
that goes
against the non-veteran.
Pretty much. I mean, I think their careers. Oh no, I think Angelique Kerber actually is a little bit younger than Serena. Not younger, but she hasn't been playing professionally as long as Serena. Yeah. And then I thought the men's final would be all situated by the time I got on air. It's not. Nadal and Djokovic are playing right now. They are in the third set. They each have won one set. They are in a third set tiebreak at the moment. 2-2. I have it on my computer here. And it is 2-2 currently in that third set tiebreak. But we do know one half of the final, and that is South African Kevin Anderson will be making his way into the final after playing the longest semifinal match in Wimbledon history at 6 hours. And 36 minutes.
I couldn't do that.
So, yeah, the reason it's so – I couldn't do it either. That's just – it's insanity. It's, like I said, the second longest – or the longest semifinal match. He beat John Isner, the American, who just so happens to also be involved in the longest tennis match flat out. And it happened in 2010 at Wimbledon. The match took a total of 11 hours – and 5 minutes. So the reason it takes so long is because the fifth set at Wimbledon, which is the final set in a man's game because it's best 3 out of 5, doesn't have a tie break like the first four sets do. You just keep playing until someone wins by 2 games. So that game 8 years ago in 2010, the fifth set score was 70-68. So just in that set alone, they played 138 games of tennis.
Now, do they take breaks?
Well, yeah, they
games?
Had to.
Okay.
That
makes
more
sense.
They have curfew there at Wimbledon. I think it's 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. I think is about where they like to draw the line. This game is approaching that very quickly. It's 2:47 here, so it's 10:47 p.m. in England right now. So they're approaching that curfew in this game. But yeah, they had to discontinue it one day and pick it up the next day. So a cumulative of 11 hours and 5 minutes for that game.
At least they got some rest.
Yeah, yeah.
If they
exactly
had to continue through, that would be awful.
Oh yeah, that'd be tough.
I'd be like, I need a wheelchair, guys, right over here.
We're gonna change the rules of this game now. But today Anderson took the win. 26-24 was the fifth set score there. He is setting himself up though for a tough final. He is 0-5 against Nadal all time. He is 1-5 against Djokovic all time. His only win came in their very first meeting back in 2008 in Miami.
Wow.
So Anderson's going to be going into a little bit of a tougher situation in that sense, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Women's final tomorrow morning, men's final Sunday morning. You can catch that right after you catch, or maybe right before you catch, the World Cup final. It's going to be a fun Sunday, though. But when we come back from break, a little bit of My Two Spenceworth on soccer in America. That's kind of after the break here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for My Two Spenceworth.
That's correct this time, man. The last couple of days we've been doing that, we kept it as a group discussion because we were in a different place. But that's right, we're back to My Two Spence with. And really, it's more just kind of about how soccer is looked at in this country. I hope that this – I mean, I know we all like to poke fun at Team USA on the men's side because they've struggled this last qualifying for the World Cup and didn't make it. And we like to point fingers and laugh and make fun and all that stuff. But really, I hope that this World Cup has – I mean, if you're not a fan of soccer and you took time to sit down and watch a couple games maybe, or you're a casual fan and you really decided to get into the World Cup this year, I hope that it's just kind of given you a more overall appreciation for the game because it is a fun – and I know that the whole 0-0 draw gets a lot of people's nerves going, and that's really kind of where the main – I feel like that's where the main disdain for soccer comes from. It's like, oh, who wants to watch a scoreless draw? But in reality, you could have that in the NFL. I mean, if you play overtime and the game in overtime is still tied in the regular season, it ends in a tie. Mm-hmm. So if you went scoreless for 70 minutes in a football game, it can end in a scoreless tie. It's just, I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I think it's happened once.
Has it?
Yeah.
So I just hope that watching these games, you see how exciting it can be and understand kind of the aspect of making runs to score. I mean, if you look at soccer and you look at kind of that box, it's kind of the start of the red zone like you would in football. It kind of gives you an idea of where people can strike from and how attacks can go. So just kind of understand more of how this game works and really how the culture of around it works, because I think it's a fun game and I think it can be entertaining if you just kind of open your mind up to it. And there's been a lot of talk about, you know, how come a country like Croatia, who's not even, you know, the size, who's like a fifth or a sixth the size of Texas or something like that, how can they field a team that can make it all the way to the World Cup final, but the U.S. can't? I don't feel like it's about size of country. I think it's about priority of sports in those countries. Any country in Europe or South America is going to prioritize soccer. That's just the way it goes. When you hear, and the reason that is because they have top-level talent playing that sport in those countries. The reason football and basketball will never be over-prioritized here or never have anything prioritized above it in the U.S. is because we have the top-level talent of those two sports playing here. I mean, we have the best basketball players. We have the best football players. So all of that attention is going to go to that. So that is it's not really about the size of our country and not being able to field a team. It's just about priorities. Basketball and football take 1 and 2. Then you have baseball and hockey that kind of take 3 and 4. And then really everything else kind of meshes in there. Soccer, lacrosse, rugby. You could have, you know, curling is picked up now because of the fencing. Big gold medal fencing. I mean, it all just kind of gets blended in. That tennis. Tennis has a big following, especially when you got majors like this and the U.S. Open coming up here. Mm-hmm. So It comes down to just being able to prioritize a little bit more. And Major League Soccer is trying to help with that on their constant expansion. They added LAFC this year. They're going to add, I believe it's Cincinnati, or no, Miami, and I believe it's San Diego in 2020. They're going to add Cincinnati in 2019. They're also adding, I had it. On my computer, I wrote it down. But basically, Major League Soccer is expanding and trying to help that, because I think what will help soccer in America is having – I mean, it's great to have stars like Wayne Rooney and David Beckham and David Gerrard all come over and play in Major League Soccer, but they're coming over on the downslope of their career. I mean, imagine LeBron James, after he plays these 4 years with the Lakers, going over to play basketball in, like, Latvia. Yeah, it'd be cool for them to have LeBron, but it's not LeBron in his prime. It's just LeBron and all of his legacy that he's bringing along with him. So that's what these soccer players bring to MLS, but it would be so much better if we got like a Neymar in his prime to come over and play here, if we got a Suarez in his prime to come over and play here. We don't have that kind of top-level talent that wants to play at Major League Soccer in the prime of their career, and that's until we do that, soccer's not going to get a higher priority in this country. It just won't. And when we come up to the World Cup in 2026, which is when the U.S., Canada, and Mexico will all host it, I know we all like joking about, oh, that's the only time the U.S. will get in. When really, I'm pretty sure the U.S. has made about 7 or 8 straight World Cups until this year. I know they hosted in 94, so whether you want to count that or not, I don't care. But I know since the field has grown to 32 and 98, this is the first one they've missed, so they've made at least 6 straight. And There's been a lot of discussion on whether the U.S. and Mexico and Canada should get automatic bids in 2026 because there's never been a three countries hosting the World Cup. A, yes, they should get automatic bids. They're the hosts. And B, that's the year that the field grows from 32 teams to 48 teams. 4 years from now in Qatar, 2022, that'll be the last World Cup with 32 teams. So when we get to 2026, even if you give the U.S., Mexico, and Canada automatic bids, you still have 45 spots to fill. I think you're going to be okay handing out three automatic bids. I mean, 10 countries play in South America under FIFA regulations. So you could take all 10 South American countries, put them into the World Cup, and still have 35 spots to fill. So I think automatic bids to Mexico, U.S., and Canada are just fine. I don't think it's any big deal to give them that. The important thing is for the U.S., looking at Qatar in 2022, take an approach like Belgium, take an approach like these teams that have a bunch of young talent that wants to thrive, bring them up and get them ready for a world stage. You have this year and next year to really get ready for qualifying. Once you hit qualifying for Qatar in 2022, that's got to be the point where you turn that knob, you turn that dial to the next level, and you've got to be able to bring people in and build that support so that 4 years from then, in 2026, you can actually have a home field atmosphere at that World Cup, because that could be the best chance for the U.S. to win it in who knows how many years after and who knows how many chances after. You really, with this coming around every 4 years, you really only get one good chance every couple generations. So I feel like that will be a time for the U.S. to really make it count. And that all starts with the build-up to Qatar. But that's the show. Thank you for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at @MyTwoSpentsworth. You can follow Sean
at @ThatSoundGuySean.
No more underscores.
No more underscores.
Thank you for listening and have a great weekend, everybody. Peace.
ESPN Radio 94.5 FM, KUUB FM, Sun Valley, Reno.